Public.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your super high recirculation numbers of music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
And now, back to this bitch that had a lot to say about me the other day in the press. Miley, what's good?
Hey, we're all in this industry. We all do interviews and we all know how they manipulate. Nikki, congratulations. And just because the VMAs have already started doesn't mean that the voting is done.
Oh, the drama. Oh, the drama. A little bit different for a podcast this week. You were listening to the war of words, or the war of performances, or the war of scripts between Nicki Minaj and Miley Cyrus at the 2015 MTV Video Music Awards, which took place Sunday night in Los Angeles.
Rest in peace to Katy Perry.
Really? Katy Perry coming through on a CoverGirl ad, not a look. In the middle of, talk about a way to be not remembered in 2015.
That was her only presence.
Her only presence was in a CoverGirl ad. I'm here with Joe Coscarelli. Joe Coscarelli, intrepid reporter, sharer of quality time with 2015 VMA host Miley Cyrus. Welcome, Joe.
How's it going?
I mean, it's turnt. Who says turnt better than Joe Coscarelli?
I'm sore from the workout of last night.
As you should be. We are here to talk about the VMAs. We are here to talk about Miley Cyrus. We are here to talk about transcripts. There's a lot that we're here to talk about.
It's all on tape.
Oh, yes. It's digital. We could just actually just play that. We should just play it. So a lot happened at the 2015 Video Music Awards, but more to the point, a lot happened before the 2015 Video Music Awards. We could sit here and talk about who won the awards. I don't remember.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Taylor.
Yeah.
Besides that, I guess Nicki, maybe?
Yeah, she won an award.
You know, like Fall Out Boy, I guess, won something. They're allowed to be at the Video Music Awards still, which that happened. But let's talk a little bit about 2015 VMA pre-gaming. There was a lot that went on in the, say, 3 to 4 weeks prior to the Video Music Awards. So let's dial back.
Sure.
Let's put maybe an explainer to catch people up if they wanna lock
this
in.
This is the Twitter fingers segment.
Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift. Those are two people who historically seem to be reasonably friendly. Taylor raps super bass in a radio interview. This is back when people
Golden era.
Yeah, this is when people are very shocked to see Taylor interacting with hip-hop and
before
black culture.
Before she discovered backseat freestyle.
Before really all of us discovered, because I mean, how did any of us discover it if not through Taylor? Taylor and Nicki getting along, Nicki appreciating, I imagine, the warm bath of Taylor's affections. And now at some point, something goes wrong. Joe, tell the people what happened 4 weeks ago.
VMA nominations, they drop. Nicki gets a couple, but they're on the fringes. They're female video, hip-hop video, not the big one.
Not the big one.
No video of the year nomination for Anaconda, which she says shifted the culture.
Shifted the Vivo numbers.
Shifted the Vivo numbers.
At minimum, shifted the Vivo numbers.
The fastest
to 100, I don't know.
Billion, yeah. A lot of views.
Is Vivo even a real company? Is that even a thing? A
lot of views
like,
on that Anaconda.
Do you have is anybody out there with like a Vivo business card? I suppose somebody.
Get at us, Vivo.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to get emails after this. Shouts to all my squad working hard on Vivo. So Vivo numbers for Anaconda are astronomical.
Big.
Astronomical.
A lot of memes, a lot of GIFs.
Yo, seriously. I saw a dude with a t-shirt with stills from the Nicki Anaconda video. I mean, you know, it's out there.
Yeah.
It's on shirts.
Yeah. She thinks that should earn it a Video of the Year nomination. Valid.
Yeah, not an unreasonable thing, especially when your man, Ed Sheeran, is out here being nominated for his first tango lesson in that category.
Have you ever seen that video to the end? I have not.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
You know,
How does it end?
With me turning it off. You know, I mess with the boy Ed Sheeran. You know, kind of came through kind of lovely on the Weekend album. You know, Ed Sheeran, that man's, he's got pain he's trying to communicate, but that is not a Flames video. Like, let's not pretend that that's a Flames video. It's not a Flames video.
Right.
Sorry, Ed. So, Anaconda, no nomination.
But Nicki uses this lack of a nomination to make a broader structural point about the idea that if someone else breaks a Vivo record, they typically get a Video of the Year nomination.
Absolutely. Also, maybe the types of the bodies in the videos. Maybe if you have skinnier women, you get a video. Maybe if you have blonder women, you get a Video of the Year nomination. Just Throwing it out there. Right. No names.
No names.
All subtweets.
All subtweets.
Yeah.
Very strong emoji game, strong subtweets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nikki's very good at the internet. Like, it's important to remember as a framework for this, and Nikki's really good at the internet.
Usually Taylor is too. She has a tighter script,
yes.
Which she went off of here, and that's where she went wrong. So she senses that maybe she was the target of some of these subs.
Mm-hmm. If you feel away.
She hits the at button right to Nikki, and she says, essentially, how dare you try and tear down another woman over this?
Yeah, like, that's basically bad. She's trying to out-feminist Nikki. She basically tried to white feminist Nikki's black feminism,
right.
Which is not the way.
Nikki was not having it.
No.
Said, I never mentioned your name. And
which she didn't.
Which she didn't.
But, you know, Taylor comes back to her and is basically like, you know, I've always supported you.
Supported you, yeah.
Another very strong.
You're welcome on stage if I win.
I almost feel like we need to take 30 seconds off just to, like, let the power of that sink in. It's not shade in the classical sense, right. But it's definitely, I mean, that was not a tight move. Don't do that.
And Nikki just wasn't having it and made it clear. And most people were, I think, on Nikki's side to the point where Taylor apologized.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the first high-profile kind of, like, squabble that Taylor's been involved in where she kind of took the L,
yeah.
Basically, and theoretically took a learning experience away from it, one would imagine. So that happens. And you think, okay, well, there's this performance, is this, who's really mad, da-da-da. At minimum, it sort of sets the stage for some kind of thing to go on at the VMAs.
And we got it.
Whew. That said, there's some things that happened in between then and now. So there is a first wave of the conversation about the Taylor Nikki thing, which resolves itself but sort of opens a conversation about, yes, is there structural racism built into award nominations and et cetera?
And people crunch the numbers, and it's true that the video of the year has never gone to a black female artist.
Was that like a 538 thing? Like, I don't know.
Maybe the Fader, you know, maybe Quartz, one of these.
Sure, I don't have a calculator. It doesn't come with a job. It's not on my desk. So anyway, that happens. And then Miley Cyrus, who's hosting the VMAs this year, you know, Miley is a person who has some things to say about race. And has had some things to say about race. And that's been a challenge for her because they have not...
Consistently.
They have not been the most artful. And certainly at 2013 VMAs, she took a bit of an L, both for twerking and also bangers appropriating black culture and being surrounding herself with black dancers and trying on the postures of black culture when she could just as easily take them off. That is something that is an argument that a lot of people have gone through, a lot of white performers. Miley caught it particularly badly in 2013, 2014.
We were just getting ready to have this conversation, and she sort of became the vehicle by which we could start to talk about these things.
Yeah, and it was also sort of a time, it was sort of like internet think piece 1.0 era. It was like
the
yeah,
the beginning.
Yeah, it was the wrong time for her to sort of like press a button. That was tough. But that said, the buttons were pressed and the conversations were started. And I think generally people are better for having those conversations.
Without a doubt.
The only person who maybe was not paying attention to those conversations, Miley Cyrus. So as you may know by now, Joe Coscarelli spent a little bit of time with Miley Cyrus in advance of the Video Music Awards. Joe Coscarelli, noted manipulator, spent a bunch of time and... there are two articles that came out of that. We will get to the second one later. The first one was a Q&A about the VMAs.
Strictly VMAs.
Pretty innocuous, all things told, as a concept. What happened?
Talk to Miley about the VMAs.
Yeah.
What was the main storyline going into this VMAs, if any?
I'd say it's Taylor and Nikki.
So at a certain point in the conversation when, you know, we had a lot of other things to talk about, mm-hmm. but sometimes we had to come back to business.
Of course.
The VMAs were business. And at a certain point, I asked her, you know, what did you make of this Nikki situation? Did you follow it? And at first, I thought she was going to duck me, which may have been wise.
Yes.
And she said, you know, I didn't really...
much mind to it.
Yeah, like I saw something about blonde women and not getting nominated for an award. Then Taylor Swift butted in. She said, so she had the general shape of it, but she said she wasn't sure of the specifics. And then I mentioned that her video, Wrecking Ball, also could have been one of the videos that Nikki was referring to because it also broke a Vivo record and was rewarded with a Video of the Year win.
And also featured skinny naked white women. Yes.
At that point, Miley started to say, you know, I didn't really like how Nikki went about this. She said, I'm not saying this is jealousy, but jealousy is no good, which she learned from yoga.
I don't do yoga. I don't know.
At that point, she started to carry on a little bit about how Nikki was selfish, and if she wanted to have a conversation about race, she could do that, but that this wasn't maybe the way to go about it, that she needed to be a little bit more polite. These are all sensitive words in these conversations about intersectional feminism.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go well for Miley.
It did not. There was a new slew of think pieces, obviously. There was a lot of shaming of what Miley was saying. So this went down Thursday afternoon before the VMAs, when the VMAs are in rehearsal. So there's not a lot of time between Thursday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. There's not a lot of time. So I've got to imagine that was awkward. We don't know what the details are. I can only hope that someday someone spills the tea to us about what the real details of what happened on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday were. But for now, we don't.
We may never know.
We're going to get there.
If anyone's going to know, we're going to
know. Yeah, I mean, let's put that out in the universe. Like, I just, you know, let's make that happen. All so right. It's going to happen. It may take some time, but it's going to happen. Now, Thursday goes to Friday, Friday goes to Saturday. You don't really hear much from Nikki, and you don't really hear anything from Miley.
No denial from Miley.
Right. No denial and no lash out from Nikki.
No explanation, no apology, no lash out.
Just
simmering beneath the surface.
Part of me as an observer was thinking, well, okay, they hugged it out.
They're just going to let this go.
Yeah, they hugged it. Like, they have some people in common, like, they have friends in common, they have professional colleagues in common. Someone put them at a table, not unlike this. And they sat down, they looked at each other, and they said, okay, that wasn't great, but okay, we're not going to let this get in the way. And then some weird things happened. So talk us through what happened on Sunday, which kind of a...
Hip-hop video of the year. What else?
Extremely important.
What else but Anaconda?
Obviously.
Obviously Anaconda. Mm-hmm. What else was even nominated? Kendrick video. All right. Great video.
Better video.
Didn't have the juice.
Big Sean, maybe?
Who knows?
I mean, E-40 was in the audience. I guess Big Sean was nominated.
Right.
But, yeah. Shout to Big Sean. Good jacket.
So Nikki wins, and Nikki comes up and gives a classic Nikki speech for the first minute or so.
All my girls making their own money.
Snotty little boys.
Great.
Don't rely on them for money.
Just poor Meek Mill sitting clapping in the front row. Literally clapping in the front. Like, Meek Mill, snotty.
Snotty little boy.
Not making that much.
She's not relying on him for his money.
I should certainly hope not.
She changes voices a few times.
It's
She's
right.
in a real playful mood.
Yeah.
She has everyone's attention. She's got that performing arts high school thing down. We're all eating out of her hand. And then the face changes. She looks in Miley's direction.
No. First, kind of random. I want to thank someone. I want to thank my pastor, Lydia. Do you know who Lydia is?
Nope.
I don't know who Lydia is. It's a race to the first profile of Lydia. I mean, we're not, we're here. We should actually be racing to Lydia right now. But anyway, I want to thank Lydia. That's the dubstep drop.
You knew it was coming there?
That's the
you
drop.
Knew it was coming.
You know something's coming.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to thank her pastor and then sort of like put her hands together and bow and walk off. It's basically like, I want to thank my pastor who basically gave me the permission to do what I'm about to do. So she thanked pastor and then...
Then she went for Miley's neck.
What did she say to Miley?
She said, I heard you've been saying some things about me in the press.
Yeah, like, and now back to, she's tossing back to Miley. Just for the setup, if you didn't watch, producers, obviously, everybody knows what's happening. Nikki's going to win. Everybody knows Nikki's going to win because these things are, it's like the Grammys.
It's decided in advance.
Yeah, everybody knows Nikki's going to win and that Nikki is going to toss back to Miley.
The host.
Yes. Or there's going to be something where Nikki has to give way to Miley. What I am at, now this is where we start talking about truth and fiction. I have some theories about what happened. You're a reporter. You maybe can't give opinion about what happened. But I'm sure you have some ideas.
Facts only.
Facts
only.
Okay. So let's have your facts only version, and then I'm going to give you my improvisational takes, my hottest takes.
Nikki shoots her shot. Cut to Miley. Miley sort of stammers a response about how we all do interviews. We all know what the media does. They manipulate.
Ooh, I felt a little dagger.
My cheeks got hot.
I would assume they did. Mine got hot on your behalf. again, you saw what I tweet. You know, like RT if you want the transcript. Fave if you don't even need it because you know. You already know.
It's on tape. Miley knows.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows.
We all know what happened.
Everybody knows.
We all know what misquoted out of context. These are things that celebrities say. Mm-hmm. It's okay. We're all playing a game.
It's no problem. We're not mad. We don't even need an apology, actually. Nope. Do you need an apology?
No.
I don't need an apology. So then Miley says that.
Nikki, does she get her mic cut at that point?
It's a little unclear. I think she gets her mic. I think her mic is cut because the producers have transitioned. I don't think they cut her mic out
just
of...
to quiet her.
Yeah, I think they cut it because it was going to be Miley's... She was tossing to Miley, right, who was going to talk to the camera.
And then Miley sort of regains her footing for a sec and stammers through another line about, you know, I lost the video music award before. Like, I'm fine.
It's not that big a deal.
Nikki, it's not that big of a deal. So she was at once saying that what she said in the interview was somehow misconstrued or manipulated out of her. And then she was sort of going back to what she was saying
right,
in the interview,
basically, deal
which
with
is
it.
Like, talk deal it with it. It's yeah. It's okay to lose a VMA.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot of sides here.
Yeah, and then
from
and
Miley talking in out both sides of her mouth. Which,
and then there's,
you know,
and then there was also the way she ended that part of the speech where she was like, "Congratulations,
right,
Nikki." I think that's when you see the cut back to Nikki, whose mic is cut, who is like, "Don't play with me, bitch." Like, you see that. Okay, so let's talk Zapruder, because this is like really a Zapruder moment at the VMAs. Obviously, you're watching it on TV, but you start seeing on Twitter, everybody's cutting 5-second, 10-second things, but they're cutting in a way that's very convenient.
Right.
A lot of the first ones I started seeing were cutting Nikki before she breaks into her smile. Because she smiled. Before she tossed to Miley, Nikki smiles.
Right before she was about to come at Miley. Or right after
she came at Miley. And then she smiled. And it was almost a knowing smile. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, they
choreographed something.
Something. Here's what I think happened. I think that there was a understanding between producers, Nikki and Miley, that there would be a brief mutual addressing of the thing. Everybody would kind of be okay. No one would have to share a stage because I imagine there is some genuine animus at play. So unlike Taylor and
there
Nikki.
There was some space.
Yes.
They never hugged.
No.
There was never going to be a hug.
No. And unlike Taylor and Nikki, who literally closed the circle and shared a stage and hugged, Miley and Nikki did not have to share a stage. But that they would address it in a way that would hopefully put a bow on it and they wouldn't have to deal with it anymore. I think Nikki went to 10 and maybe Miley was expecting a 4. Miley got a little bit off her square.
Shirk.
Yes. And said things that were not in the script or at least in the framing of the scene. And then Nikki was like, oh, now you're going to tell me it's okay to lose? Like, oh, now you're going to say congratulations? Oh, okay,
so
don't play with me.
So you think that it started fake-ish and got too real?
Yes. In watching, again, this is some real Zapruder stuff, but like in watching all the different clips and watching it back on my television a few times, that's how I feel like it happened. It all of a sudden became anti-theatrical. Which means it became the most theatrical that it could have been.
A great TV moment.
Honestly, a high point. Like, if you were a person who, like, performed an elaborate dance number, if you were Pharrell or Macklemore last, you don't exist.
It's over.
It doesn't, why did you even show up?
The outside stage was buried under the Miley Nikki avalanche.
Absolutely. Anyway, that happened, and it was intense, and it was tough, and it was not a good look for Miley. Ultimately,
it really wasn't. I think she tried to, by the end of the show, she had her own fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
She maybe tried to forget that ever happened, mm-hmm. shift the attention. But ultimately, you're right. It's just not a good look for her. And it shows, I think, that she has, you know, a racial blind spot still.
That's a thing that I think has continued to be a challenge for her. And I it doesn't seem that oftentimes when a famous person missteps in a way, whether it's, you know, a racial thing or a gender thing or a religion thing, like their team will try to educate them or they will somehow make a point of coming out at some later point and saying, I have learned and I now will no longer do this. But Miley doesn't appear to be in that position.
Can't tell her.
It doesn't seem that way. We will talk about why in a little bit. Last night, though, the thing that was most striking were these sort of moments of kind of like real, I mean, authenticity is a bad word, but real truth that kind of just like sort of tore through the whole scrim of falseness. You know, first of all, shouts to Van Toffler.
Van Toffler.
Van Toffler. Like
going
a real,
out on a high note.
A real, a legit OG. Here's the thing. I'm not convinced he knew what he was going to get when he put all those people in the same room, but I think he knew perfectly well he'd get something.
And tell us a little bit who Van Toffler is.
Van Toffler I believe his formal title is the president of MTV. He's basically in charge of everything. And in your interview with Miley, she basically says, Van comes to me and says, I want you to host. It's my last year.
He's already done with the job. He just comes back to close out the VMAs.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bow on his career. And no matter what, you put Miley on that stage, you're going to get something interesting. Even if no truth had happened last night, you can say it's visually interesting. It's a little bit fascinating. Maybe it's a little bit adolescent.
Messy.
Yeah. It's a story.
But fresh.
It's a story. And it's certainly different from 2014, which is a dud of a year. So he's going out on a high note. But I think also Van is astute enough to understand that you put Miley, Kanye, Bieber, Taylor, you put all these people in the same room, someone's going to turn up.
Someone's going to cry.
Yes. Maybe more than one person. So there were a couple of moments that really jumped out at me. Let's talk first about the tears. Justin Bieber. Talk to us about Justin Bieber. What happened? First of all, let's start with the hair, and then we'll get to the performance.
I thought the hair looked good.
I thought the hair looked good, too, but then he put a cap on for his performance.
Did he get shamed out of the new haircut?
I don't
haircut?
Know. He had some real K-pop hair.
Sometimes you get a new haircut, and you're just not comfortable in it yet, and you got to put the hat on.
Justin Bieber, like, you certainly had worse haircuts than that. So that seems strange. Anyway, that's a sidebar. Justin Bieber performs his new single.
What Do You Mean?
Yeah. I was going to be Where Are You Now? Same thing.
Also a good song. He performed that one too.
Justin Bieber performs this song in classic Bieber fashion.
Flies through the air.
Right. But first he's like half dancing. It's like everybody's dancing around him. He's sort of like not really wanting to dance because he doesn't want to be
He's getting a little better.
He is, but he doesn't want to be this guy. It's like he's literally, I mean, we'll get to Kanye, but it's like Justin Bieber, like literally whoever Justin Bieber's inner soul is died to please all these millions of teenage girls. That's a real thing.
And
I feel bad. Like when I watch him do that, I feel bad for him. So Bieber performs a song, and at the end of the song, he goes up on wires and he
does some flips.
Chris Angel, Peter Pan. Jesus Christ, flipping,
all
flying.
All of it.
The whole thing. And then at the end, he comes down. And he looks visibly relieved, number one. And then the camera cuts away and then cuts back to him. And he's doubled over.
Breaking down.
In actual tears.
Actual tears? Question mark?
What do you think?
I've seen Chris Brown do that before.
Crying?
Yeah,
or flying?
Both.
Do you think that Bieber knew he was on camera at that exact moment?
I think Bieber only operates as if he's on camera.
Okay. So you think they're false tears?
I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying he knew it was a big moment for him. I think he probably felt some relief, some catharsis having come back and performed. I'm sure he was feeling a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He's also an actor.
Sure.
Not professionally.
Here's a potential curveball idea about the Bieber tears. What if the rig wasn't working correctly?
And he was in pain?
In pain / was worried that something could have happened and it didn't happen.
And was shook
and was grateful.
Also.
Yes.
Okay.
When I looked at that, and I watched it obviously a bunch of times, when I looked at that, my initial read was like something just went wrong.
Okay.
That's how it felt.
But still the performance was good.
Absolutely.
No one got hurt.
Nothing visible happened. Like it didn't seem like something happened.
And if this were last year's VMAs, maybe the Bieber tears are
the
moment. Headline this morning.
Absolutely.
But
no.
Last night he stood no chance. He would have had to cry blood for us to, you know.
I mean, we've already spent way more time than I thought we were.
Yeah.
You ever see that iPhone case they sell like on ShopGene or whatever? It's like 100% boys tears.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It's like Pop Miss Andrew,
right.
Basically.
Sure.
I want one that says 100% Bieber tears.
Yeah.
Do you think someone, maybe one of our listeners, can make that for us?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Just get at us if you've made that.
Bigcartel.com, something.
$10? $12? Yeah, it's reasonable. Yeah. So Bieber tears, honest, quote unquote, moment one. Honest moment two.
Tell us about Kanye, John. What did he do last night?
Well, I think in order to set the stage for that, let's maybe listen to a little bit of Kanye. So let's listen to a little New Slaves to get us in the mood.
I throw these Maybach keys. I wear my heart on the sleeve. I know if we the New Slaves, I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I know that we the New Slaves. I see the blood on the leaves. They throwing hate at me. Want me to stay at ease. We fuck when your corporation. Y'all sick and can't control me. I know that we the New Slave. I know that we the New Slave. I'm about to wild.
So Kanye West, when the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award, which maybe is the only important award.
Right, sort of the lifetime achievement,
yeah.
MTV, you've mattered for long enough that we owe you something.
Right, although now, like, he'll never come back to the VMAs. There's literally, why would he ever come back?
For Big Sean.
When he gets his Video Vanguard Award. Yeah.
A couple years.
I can't wait. Kanye wins a Video Vanguard Award. And, of course, the setup is that Taylor Swift is giving him the award. Now, I had a little bit of a riff written that I did not put in the notebook, but I was watching Kanye watching Taylor introduce him, and I literally am typing in my computer, "We all must smile through pain." And I ended up with like a whole paragraph about the performance of being happy in an environment where you know that you're not happy.
And Kanye's smiles often look pained.
Yes, but that seemed like a particular thing because Taylor is sort of inverting the moment, obviously, where Kanye takes her award from her. She's giving him an award, number one. Number two, she's repurposing his speech. He's sitting there having a great time with Kim, like a date night with the wife. They're having a blast. They're cuddling up together. They're laughing. They're looking. You know, he's dancing with the Weeknd. Yeah, they're having a blast. Yeah. But then for those like 90 seconds, he's just, you can see, he's like, I know the cameras are on me. I know this is absurd. I have to smile.
Can we talk for a second about how Taylor Swift recalls the first album she bought
on
iTunes?
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Swift, not that much younger than me.
Mm.
You know, people my
age. She's, what, 25?
Sure. People my age can remember the first CD they bought, mm-hmm. you know, often. Shout out to No Doubt's Tragic Kingdom. Mm. I think that may
Good
have
call.
Been mine.
Good yeah, choice.
Still love it.
Yeah.
But Taylor didn't say the first CD she bought. She no. said, College Dropout was the first album I ever bought on iTunes.
With my, me and my brother bought on iTunes. Yes. So
a strange benchmark in one's life, but I guess we're going to roll with it.
Well, it's also, someone ran the numbers and basically was like, that's not possible. Did you see that online?
It's fact check.
Yeah, someone fact checked. Someone like
three Pinocchios.
Yeah. So that there's that and also shots to Spotify.
Always shots to Spotify,
yeah, always
when
shots
Taylor Swift is
yeah,
standing
I mean,
on a stage.
Absolutely. I mean, she might as well have just said, like, the first song I ever heard on Beats Music. Like, you know, like on Beats 1. On Ebro Show on Beats 1. You know, like, who knows? But, like, yes. So shots to Spotify and also maybe not factually possible.
But a nice idea.
Sure. That also, like, do you really think her and her brother were sitting there, like, collectively with their parents' credit card?
Punching like, in the numbers.
Yeah, and, like, agreeing on
Do you think they bought
album?
The edited or the unedited? If they bought it at all.
I'm going to go with edited. I'm also going to say they maybe bought it when they were like 17.
Okay.
When she was like 17, not 12. Anyway, that's a sidebar. Well, you know, can we see the receipts? So Taylor's introducing. Kanye looks uncomfortable and then comes up. 2 minutes of pure silence.
From the crowd.
Not from the crowd. From Kanye West. I mean, I literally timed it. I pulled out my phone, put timer, and I timed it. 2 minutes, or like a minute and 58 seconds. He's drinking in the adulation, but you also sense that, like, that's his version of, like, I want to thank my pastor, Lydia.
It was the runway for whatever he was about to do.
Right. He goes into what, you know, we used to, in 2013, call the Kanye rant. And on the Yeezus tour, every night, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it was, extemporaneous speeches.
I was recently recalling one with a friend where he shouted out Lenny Kravitz as one of his, you know, favorite artists of all time, really made a lane for Kanye's career.
And why not? I mean, no, but okay.
Lenny Kravitz.
Just Lenny Kravitz. And then Kanye starts talking. It's like he's trying to land the plane in a windstorm.
He almost made about 30 points.
Almost. It seemed like he was maybe going to start apologizing for what he had done, but very notably, he did not apologize. He didn't apologize when I talked to him in 2013. He did not apologize then. But he sort of floated around it. He's talking about having a daughter and what it would mean to take something away from someone else's daughter, which is also, if you remember the discussion in 2009, apparently Taylor's mother confronted him backstage after that happened.
It was basically like,
you don't want that. No, you don't want it with Miss Swift.
I would not want it.
No, you don't want no parts of that. And then it's like you see the gas come, like the fire is starting to burn.
Lit.
And he starts talking about ideas and how he died so that artists can have opinions and that he's going to continue to make art and it's not always going to be polite.
And that he really does not like award shows.
And also you see the cynicism of MTV teasing how Taylor's going to give him the award, which
he
is
broke down the fourth wall a little bit there.
Totally right. Because even as I was watching the VMAs, I was like, we all conceptually know that Taylor's going to do this, but they started teasing it earlier. And I was like, oh, why would you? You don't need to stoke it. Like, any thinking person knows this is going to happen. Stoking and stoking. He kicks down the wall. It just goes. And Kanye is sort of like a beautiful thinker and doesn't have a particular direction.
Not linear.
Completely. Just a cloud. He's a cloud. And just goes and goes, and the crowd is with him. He basically mainstreamed the word bro.
Listen to the kids, bro.
Not bruh. Bro.
It was a hard O.
Sound. Like, the first thing he said was bro. Bro. Like, is the new album going to be called Bro? Like, is that a new thing? So he re-cooled the word bro. And it was a strange, shocking interjection of, you know, his version of truth and his version of pure honesty in a show that sort of celebrates artifice. And I don't mean that in a cynical way. Like, I very much like artifice. But,
and Kanye does, too, if it's on his terms.
Sure.
But an award show is not his terms.
No. And that happened for 10 minutes. And it was very elegant and very poetic and very vexing, I think, to a lot of people. And then at the end, he announced that he'll be running for president in 2020, which I thought was kind of like a weird buzzkill.
Yeah, it wasn't the punchline I was looking for. No. But, you know, he was untouchable, basically. He could end it however he wanted to end it.
I mean, you know, he admitted to smoking weed before the show to knock the edge off. It was great. He was in a good place. And now he never has to go – like we said before, he never has to go back.
Yeah, he got his Vanguard Award.
So that's what happened to the VMAs. Now, what didn't happen to the VMAs was a lot of Miley Cyrus, which is sort of surprising because the sales pitch is very much wacky Miley is going to have 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes to just sort of like explode all over basic cable.
There's something about the skit-heavy version of hosting that she did, mm-hmm. where it's pre-taped segments, yep. that feels easy to talk over. It's basically like a commercial at that point. Mm-hmm. You know the jokes are canned. They're mm-hmm. probably not great. Sorry, Seth Rogen, whoever wrote them.
Ike Barinholtz.
Yeah. It just...
Resurrection.
It was easy to ignore. She mm-hmm. was doing shtick. She was doing the shtick that we know she was going to, that we knew she was going to do.
And poking fun at her extreme personality.
Instagram, you know, not wearing a lot of clothes, mm-hmm. loving weed, but also some strange racial jokes that should never have been made.
And also, you know, outfits. Obviously, from a fashion perspective, you know, there's, you know, she was on her Rose McGowan last night. She was on her Tank Girl. She was also on her white girl wearing dreadlocks, like false dreadlocks, at least changed once, possibly twice.
Two different colors of...
There were yellow, and then there were purple, and then there was like a rainbow maybe at some point. So I don't know if I was just not seeing the full thing when it was purple. So it was either two or three different sets of dreadlocks.
And
for someone who's basically stared down now 2 years of critiques about how you literally put on and take off black culture to sort of show up and say, I'm literally putting on dreadlocks. Not like Fetty Wap puts on dreadlocks, but like literally putting on dreadlocks and taking them off 20 minutes later. I would say she's trolling, but I actually don't think she is.
A questionable choice. It reminded me a little bit of being at the Grateful Dead shows a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. but from Miley Cyrus, she doesn't get that. She doesn't get that hippie benefit of the doubt.
Unless she, you know, maybe they're Wayne Coyne's dreads. Maybe Wayne just has a few laying around. I mean, I don't know. So Miley performs at the end of the show. I mean, there's a number. We can talk about the skits, and we can talk. But I think in short, what you took away from it is that. No one is saying no. Like, no, this, I said this 2 years ago about Miley, but it's more true now. Just no one's saying no. She's sort of showing up and saying, I'm going to do this wacky stuff. And it's not so much that someone should say, no, don't do it because it's wacky. Someone say, hey, let's refine it. Hey, let's make it punchier. Let's da-da-da-da. Because it sort of, it all, especially in the face of the drama of last night, it all kind of felt a little adolescent.
As interstitials between these other moments, her world just didn't translate on that scale.
No.
And there are parts of Miley Cyrus's world, however freaky it is, that do make sense in her personal context, but trying to guide the VMAs, it was flat.
No, and I think personal, that word is incredibly important because when you consume her as an Instagram follower, you consume her now with new music, it is very specific, and it's easy to look on your phone and say, ah, Miley. But like you say, controlling this entire thing, or more to the point, not controlling it, right down to the moment where she's not wearing any clothes behind a curtain, and then the curtain slips, and no one thought, hey, maybe let's put a bra on.
In case the curtain slips.
Exactly. Like, there's no preparation for a moment like that. You didn't get the sense that someone was steering with a really, really firm hand.
But like the Bieber tears, a Miley nip slip in this show sort of went under the radar.
I totally agree. It's strange. Again, if that happened in 2014, it would be the lead. And it's barely something we're even thinking about. So Miley, at the end of the show, performs a song. The song is called Do It. And it's Miley Cyrus and her dead pets. Z.
With a Z.
A Z. And the dead pets are the Flaming Lips, which, to be frank, is a better name for the Flaming Lips than the Flaming Lips. Just throwing that out there.
And Miley at this point is just throwing so much on the stage at once.
Yeah.
She's introduced by trans youth, mostly,
who are her foundation. Yes, who are affiliated with her foundation.
She brings up a bunch of drag queens from RuPaul's mm-hmm. Drag Race, mm-hmm. which sort of weren't announced, and
there was no context provided. There was no sense earlier in the show that this was going to happen. A lot of the stuff Miley talked a little bit of in advance of, kind of like, I'm going to advance my agendas via the VMAs. Some of it's aesthetic and some of it's political, but like all the political stuff is very much contained at the end.
And it felt like some missed opportunities there. She had, you know, she was giving her foundation a good look, but nobody knew who these people were.
They weren't formally introduced. You didn't understand the impact specifically of who they were and why they were there. You basically had to look it up.
That said, the performance, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Went off, you know, as well as this thing could have Miley Cyrus's batty new project.
Persona.
Yeah.
Wayne Coyne is there shooting off some kind of fireworks between her legs. That happened. And it turns out that not only is that a performance of a new song with 24 RuPaul Drag Race contestants introduced by trans youth from the Happy Hippie Foundation, it's also the teaser for a new Miley Cyrus album.
Miley Cyrus and Her Dead Pets.
Right. It's a new Miley Cyrus album. So that's coming out immediately following the VMAs on SoundCloud on a dedicated URL, MileyCyrusAndTheirDeadPets.com, which didn't work.
Of course.
But soon enough, it worked. Tell us a little bit about this album, because part two of the Coscarelli Cyrus experience, you're not just there to talk about the VMAs. No, you were there to talk about this album. So talk to us about where Miley is in her, like, in her being, and then how that's translated into what you heard on this record.
So I think the beginning of this record sort of goes all the way back to her Bangers tour, or the world tour that she did throughout almost all of 2014 after the album came out, which was, you know, her first big adult album post Hannah Montana, put Hannah Montana to bed mm-hmm. for good. Nobody was confusing her with a Disney star anymore. Mm-hmm. Then she's on this big world tour. She starts writing songs, and after a tour stop in Tulsa, Oklahoma, she goes to record with her musical heroes, the Flaming Lips. Wayne Coyne is putting together this Beatles tribute album, wants her to sing on Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, obviously.
Everybody's very on the nose. I want to say, for a bunch of folks who are sort of claiming to be psychedelic and wacky, everybody's real super on the nose.
So Wayne Coyne told me, this is a nice little fun fact, they're recording that night after the Tulsa show in a studio owned by Hanson, I think.
Ooh.
So,
of
Mbop fame, obviously.
Yeah, Hanson getting that structural money. That's good.
And, you know, they have a little time left over, so they work on some ideas, and Wayne Coyne has, I guess, begun writing songs that he thought Miley could perform. They'd mm-hmm. sort of shook up a friendship a few months earlier after, you know, both complimenting each other often in the press. And one of the songs from that session becomes Do It, which is the song she performed mm-hmm. and the first song on this project.
If you have not had the opportunity to hear Do It, what is the chorus of Do It?
The song starts with the chorus, yeah, I smoke pot.
Fact check.
True.
True.
Yeah, I love peace.
Sure. True.
I don't give a F. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Also true.
Seemingly, yeah.
I ain't no hippie.
Debatable, I feel. 50-50.
Tongue in cheek, that part.
Sure.
She said to me, this didn't make the piece, she said, you know, I'm a dirty hippie, but I'm not no granola. That's a direct quote. She said, I drive a Porsche. I listen to hip hop. I'm both. I'm everything. I'm none of it at all.
And were you like, let me see you do that yoga? No? Okay. Anyway.
So this is sort of becomes the seed of this record, which balloons into something 23 tracks long.
Like 90 minutes, basically?
About 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Heavily produced by The Flaming Lips, co-written with Wayne Coyne. A couple songs from Miley's standby collaborators from last time around. Mike Will Made It, mm-hmm. most notably. And also Oren Yule from mm-hmm. Adore You, which was the opening song on Bangers.
Sure. And Asher Roth fame.
And Miley's just making this album at her house.
Her own pace,
her own friends, getting beats from people she's comfortable with, messing with them with Wayne Coyne, sending files back and forth. Wayne lives in Oklahoma. And she's doing this outside of the watchful eye of her record label.
RCA Records, on which she released Bangers, but which, according to your piece, had no hand in the making of these songs and no financial investment in the making of these songs.
No. She was doing this completely as a passion project. There was talk that it was going to be a Flaming Lips featuring EP. It was sort of unclear. And then at a certain point, Wayne said, you know, I thought we'd pick maybe 6 of these songs or 10 of these songs or 12 of these songs. And at a certain point, Miley decides, no, I want to put out all 23 of these songs and they have to be free.
Which they very much are
on SoundCloud, for stream at least.
Right, or not if you know how to use the internet. What are these songs like? I listened briefly to this album. They seem like they're very much all over the place. There's not a driving central idea. Unlike Bangers, which even if the songs didn't all sound alike, there's an operating principle behind Bangers. The operating principle behind this new album basically seems to be, we'll try whatever.
I think that's true, although there are Wayne Coyne fingerprints sort of all over it. Mm-hmm. It starts at its most Flaming Lipsy, where it's basically, you know, Miley singing songs that sound like Yoshimi or whatever these classic mm-hmm. Flaming Lips songs are. But then thrown in among these Flaming Lips-esque tracks with, you know, a lot of Wayne Coyne in them, and Miley gamely playing along because she's loved this music for a long time. Then there are these Mike Will songs where some of them Wayne has touched and, you know, done a little futzing with, and some he hasn't, but Mike has sort of internalized this idea of what Miley's going for, which is, you know, a little bit lo-fi, a little bit psychedelic.
So he's ghostwriting for Miley Cyrus.
Could say that.
Just throwing that out there.
And so you get this strange...
What's good, Miley? What's good?
You get this strange mix of songs. You have these bassy, sad songs about her dead dog, Floyd. Rest in peace to Floyd. A big spectral presence on this entire record.
And also, according to your article, a spectral presence because he has been reborn inside Wayne Coyne.
But then you get some pop songs. There are some straight Miley Cyrus pop songs that, you know, could have been on Bangers, could mm-hmm. have been on a Bangers major label follow-up. There's a song called Lighter, just a really nice Mike Will Miley power ballad, mm-hmm. Genuinely sweet. There's some really fun songs, songs about getting cheated on, this song Freaky, which I think is pretty, you know, I would listen to it on the radio. Mm-hmm. I Forgive You is the song about, you know, being cheated on. Mm-hmm. There's one called Baby Talk, in which she just rants through the verses, freeform monologue about how her boyfriend is a little creepy and too much PDA and stop slobbering on me. She says, when you send me the queen emoji and I send you the monkey covering its eyes, that means I'm embarrassed. She, you know, she's speaking for her generation.
Absolutely.
She's got some wit. She's a sharp girl. Mm-hmm. There's one song where she takes an old Flaming Lips 9-minute instrumental track and lays some vocals over part of it. All over the place.
So it's a drug album.
It's a little bit of a drug album.
More than it's a drug album, it's an album about how she is allowed to do what she wants to do.
Allowed to do whatever
drugs,
she wants to do.
That's drugs, and if it's a 9-minute Flaming Lips instrumental, it's a 9-minute Flaming Lips instrumental. No one is going to put Miley Cyrus in the corner.
So you've got two things at work here. You've got Miley's complete freedom, in which she has sort of retreated from tabloid celebrity, whatever she was doing a couple years ago, and she is holed up in wonderful house in her garage recording studio, making songs with people she sees as legends, buying as many pets as she wants, smoking all the weed that she wants, just having a great time. And then you have this budding mentorship relationship that she has with Wayne Coyne, and you get the dead pets.
Yes, you do. Most assuredly, that is exactly what you get. I think to put a bow on this bad boy, let's go out with a little bit of Do It. Although we do not have the backup dancing RuPaul contestants, but we'll do our best. Thank you for listening to the New York Times Copcast. Thank you to pop music reporter Joe Coscarelli. Thank you to my Yeezy Boost 350s.
Looking fresh.
I appreciate that.
Right out of the box?
Pretty much. Well, only second day wear.
Video Vanguard.
Yeah, that's like my life is a Video Vanguard. You can read Joe Coscarelli on Miley Cyrus in two ways. Miley on the VMAs and Miley on her Miley Cyrus and the Dead Pets album, all at nytimes.com/music. You can read me talking about Eruptions of Sincerity at the VMAs at nytimes.com/music. Check out our Spotify playlist, which I wish could have spoken word excerpts from the VMAs, but probably won't. Check us out on iTunes and all other places where you consume podcasts. Our producers are Tamara Best, Jocelyn Gonzalez. Check us next week.